Greetings. These are the chronicles of one man's adventures and misadventures in Asia. I am Kokujin. In episode 1, I share the roots of my aspirations to live and work in Japan. Thank you for downloading. This is not the episode I had hoped to be doing. As the entire world knows, less than a week ago, Japan was hit by a catastrophic earthquake, followed by a catastrophic tsunami, and is now experiencing multiple compromises at its many nuclear power plants. To date, the known death toll numbers at around 5,000 souls, and there are another 5,000 souls or so who are unaccounted for. Entire towns and villages along the seaboard and the coast have been literally wiped off the map. It's difficult to know. Words are inadequate at a time like this. And I can only say that I have a few acquaintances and friends who have friends and family in Japan. I am praying for them and their families to be well and to be safe. It seems selfish to consider my personal plans for Japan at this point, but that was the intent of this podcast, and so I suppose that even though less than a week ago when I was excitedly contemplating a possible future in Japan, life does go on, and I still desire very much to live in Asia. So I will continue with this podcast and discuss the source of those aspirations and some possible plans that will help me realize those aspirations. As far as my desire to live in Asia and my desire to live in Japan specifically, the roots of that lie with my father. Dad spent some time in Asia during the Korean War, in Japan in particular, and although I didn't appreciate what that meant before he told me, allow me to share a story with you. When I was about 11 or 12, one day Dad said we were going out to dinner, just he and I. And so we got cleaned up and we headed out. And we arrived at the restaurant, and I remember that the lights were low and it seemed quiet and peaceful. I seem to recall a koi pond or perhaps a large aquarium near the front door. And after we were seated and had a few moments to review the menu, the waitress came over and very sweetly asked if she could take our order. About my father, there's some things you should understand. Dad was... Three things stand out in my mind when I reflect upon my father. He was wickedly smart. He was devastatingly charming when he wanted to be. And he had a very well-defined sense of humor. So when the waitress came over, Dad looked up at her and he smiled and he said something completely unintelligible to my ears. Now I know what it was. He said, "Konbanwa." But at the time, I was sure that Dad was about to launch yet another of his pranks, which would cause me no end of embarrassment and social ridicule. But it didn't turn out that way. Dad said a few words and the waitress's face just lit up. And they literally had about a 10-minute conversation in Japanese, which I came to discover later, Dad spoke fluently. And it turned out that during the Korean War, when Dad was in the Army as a radio man or a computer specialist, whatever his job title was, Dad lived in Japan for a couple of years. I believe he even may have stayed with some Japanese host families. But at any rate, Dad was so immersed in the culture of Japan that he picked up a degree of fluency in the language that he was able to retrieve it some 20 years later, and he was still fluent. And so from that, and from Dad sharing, regaling us with tales of his exploits in Japan, Dad kind of planted the seed that even though we were not rich. And even though we were not white, we could and should aspire to more out of life than what was around the next corner or what was around the next block. And I say it with precisely those words because Americans are some of the least traveled people around. We don't get passports. Our idea of an adventure is going down to Hawaii. And there's nothing wrong with Hawaii. I haven't been yet. But when you consider that some of the most historical figures in American, well, let's just talk about American letters. W.E.B. Du Bois, living in Berlin, Germany, getting degreed in Berlin, Germany. Richard Wright, James Baldwin, all these guys living abroad in Europe, living in over in France and living in England and having a life that they were pretty much denied in the United States. For us now to limit our view to our own city, our own town, and never take full advantage of anything beyond that is just, in my opinion, it's shameful. My travels have been nowhere near as extensive as I would like. I would love to be able to tell you that, yes, I've traveled the world and I've been in this country and I've tasted that cuisine and I've dated those women over there. And what I can say is I made it as far as Europe. I was stationed in Berlin, Germany for 2 years with the army just literally months before the Berlin Wall came down. And I recently had the opportunity to spend a month in Thailand. I was over there in Bangkok. I'm not going to tell you about that now because that deserves a podcast of its very own. So I'm so sorry if you were listening at this point and hoping that I'm going to divulge some earth-shaking and wonderful exploits in Bangkok. I had a couple, but I'm not going to tell you today. So sorry. Come back next week. At any rate, when I had the opportunity finally to consider the next step in my career and what I could do now that I have no particular obligations that require that I stay here in the States, those dreams and hopes of living in Japan came back. And I should probably also mention some of the popular culture that influenced my interest. Of course, when I was growing up, Bruce Lee was the man. Bruce was kicking butt and taking names all over the place. And Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali and Jim Kelly and maybe Jim Brown were, I mean, those were the guys. And I found out years later that there was an entire range of popular figures, fictional characters to be sure, some real life characters that I had no idea about. I really didn't know who the samurai were and had no reference to consider them until I was exposed to James Clavell's Shogun. Not the book, mind you. I read the book later. I'm talking about the miniseries, which if you haven't seen, I strongly urge you to run out, grab the DVD set, and just park yourself at home for a few nights and watch it. Toshiro Mifune was certainly put a different perspective on Bruce Lee and Jim Kelly and all those cats that I was so influenced by when I was growing up. Toshiro Mifune and the samurai, they were some bad dudes. There's no other way to put it. And I began to explore some of the other popular characters that were out there. And among the very short list of characters who I came across, when my son was growing up, we went to the library all the time. And of course, you know, like most little guys, he loved the comic section, and I was always kind of peeking over his shoulder to see that he found something in the comics that wasn't blonde hair and blue-eyed and that maybe he could relate to. And somewhere in there, my son found this comic called Usagi Yojimbo. And if I'm mispronouncing that, please correct me, and I apologize in advance. Usagi Yojimbo is about a samurai rabbit. The artwork, the depiction of Japanese feudal society, the depiction of the samurai and the bandits and the robbers and the politicians. I read every issue I could get my hands on just as well as my son did. So there was Usagi Yojimbo. There was Dragon Ball Z to a much lesser extent, but we did enjoy that. And there were a couple of series that really I found riveting. There was one called Lone Wolf and Cub, which was published in Japanese in Japan originally, but a small publishing company called Dark Horse Press, it might be Dark Horse Comics, but at any rate, Dark Horse apparently arranged with the publisher in Japan to bring this excellent series over to the United States, and they republished it, and they redid the artwork and packaged it, and Lone Wolf and Cub and Samurai Executioner by the same team of artists, and I'm so sorry I don't have the names of those artists at hand, but the titles should be easily recognizable on Amazon or your local bookstore. These were some of the most powerful depictions that I could have ever hoped for, and I only wish that I had been exposed to them at a much younger age, because I certainly would have devoted myself to learning Japanese so that I could one day travel there and view these materials in their native language. And then the other major and recent inspiration for me that I never heard of when I was younger, and I so much wish that I had, was a guy called Zatoichi. Zatoichi is about a blind masseur who travels across feudal Japan, again, giving massages for his, I mean, that's how he makes his living, his daily bread, but also gambling for his recreation. And to top it off, even though he's blind, Zatoichi is an absolute badass Jedi-level blind samurai magician with a sword. And I'm quite sure that some of Zatoichi's exploits influenced George Lucas in the development of Star Wars, but the thing that always got me with Zatoichi was he was just a very humble cat. Yeah, he could take your head off if you forced him, but for the most part, Zatoichi's whole aspiration in life was to give a good massage so that he could make his coin, so that he'd go down to the noodle house and have some noodles, have a beer, and then head over to the gambling hall to do a bit of gambling. That was it. He was a very simple, humble guy. And as long as you left him alone to let him do his thing, there would be no problems. And invariably, and just like in all around the world, but invariably, a man who is quiet and humble and self-effacing, you just know somebody's going to come mess with him. And there was always some young punk or group of punks who would see Zatoichi and immediately discount him because he didn't look like anything. He wasn't wearing a gorgeous kimono. He didn't have the latest shiny gear. And they would always jump on the easiest quote-unquote deficiency that they could. They would call him such colorful names as "you blind bastard." And at that point, Zatoichi would usually tell them, warn them, you know, "I don't want any problems with you, leave me alone." And of course, you know, just like in real life, nobody's going to leave you alone. And at that point, Zatoichi would pull that sword and throw down. You have to see it. There are a few clips of Zatoichi on YouTube. I recommend you take a look today if you haven't already. And of course, the final piece of this puzzle that would draw me to Japan, Seven Samurai. Those guys were, the depiction of them was just so gallant. And even though it was a struggle to read the English subtitles and try to track all the characters, and even though it's not even in color, it's a black and white film. It came out in, I believe Kurosawa put it out in something like 1954. But that is, if that movie does not make it to the top 20 greatest films of all time, and somebody's lying. So all these popular culture influences and my father's stories and growing up in Seattle and going to school with pretty much everybody in the world, including no small number of kids from Japan, I guess it's not as strange or exotic as it might be to a lot of other people, but it is desirable, and I very much want to go there. And that, of course, brings us back to full circle to recent events in Japan. As I said, I would love to go and teach in Japan, or go work and live in Japan. I'm doubtful that that's going to happen at this point, at least not immediately. The disaster is ongoing. Those nuclear reactors are still running hot. And if the report I saw today is to be believed, they are running out of options at least one of them to get matters back under control. At this point, I can't even imagine that the English schools are going to be doing any great level of business for any time soon. And of course, going over here and teaching English was my entree into making a living over there, at least initially. So I'm not sure that going to Japan is in my immediate future, which brings me back to, well, where can I go instead? As I look around the world and look around the possibilities, China has been recruiting English teachers in great numbers. And that seems to be, that would be my next choice, particularly if I could get into Shanghai or Hong Kong or Beijing. Shanghai, because it has such, at one point, Shanghai was an international city. There were people there, certainly there are a lot more Europeans than anybody else, but it was an international city, and, you know, a lot of that international architecture is still there, and I believe I would do well in Shanghai. I believe I'd fit in quite well. I'd also love to see Hong Kong. I'd love to see Beijing. If not China, my next choice, and I say this with a degree of trepidation, would be Korea, primarily Seoul. And the trepidation stems from this fact. Japan and the Japanese can be broadly generalized as a very stratified and structured culture. The rules of public behavior that I would imagine were those rules of public behavior that I would imagine developed and hardened during the feudal era still carry through today. As I look at the earthquake coverage and the disaster coverage out of Japan, even though they have gotten hit with at least three really good reasons to lose their collective minds, the people in the shelters are lining up to get emergency aid. They are waiting in line. And yet, you know, you look in the United States, for instance, and there are people rioting to get the latest iPhone. If there's a power shortage or a power outage in any major city, you best not be on the street. If your team wins a ball game, you best not be on the street, because you and I both know the idiots at large will take that as the latest excuse to just go out and act a fool. They start burning cars, they start trashing windows. And, you know, I contrast that to the behavior in Japan, where they actually have some good reasons to act crazy, and I just shake my head in shame at my people. I think that the reception of a foreigner like myself, I'll never be Japanese, but the outright and vehement and violent rejection because I'm not Japanese, that just doesn't happen there. Pretty much the Japanese will treat other Japanese as, yes, that's another Japanese, and everybody else is not. Which is not to say that there are not some racial politics in play in Japan. There's definitely a preference for blonde-haired, blue-eyed foreigners, if you have to have foreigners. But it's not like it is in other Asian countries. Japan, my research and the anecdotal reports that I'm getting, it's easier there. It's not the anecdotal reports I'm getting out of China are that the Chinese don't love Americans or Black Americans any more than they're loved back here at home, but they probably won't say anything about it. They're not going to get up in your face and start calling you names and trying to chase you down the street and beat you down. Contrast that with Korea. Korea has a really poor reputation for their treatment of foreigners. From what I can gather, the Koreans pretty much treat all foreigners in very similar manner to the way black people in the United States were treated in the hard and dirty South around the 1950s. They make no bones about the fact that they don't like us. They would rather we step in front of a train or something. And there have been multiple reports of violence against foreigners simply because they're foreigners. So why would I want to go to Korea? I would contemplate going to Korea because living in Korea is really not that different from living in the U.S. I know how to deal with idiots. I may not know the language in Korea, but, you know, if somebody's cursing you out and talking about your mama, even if it's not in your native tongue, most times you can kind of figure out that they're not asking you to join them for dinner or join them over a shot of sake. And I've experienced enough of that idiocy here in the States to know how to deal with it, I hope. But moreover, working in Korea, teaching in Korea, would give me some teaching abroad experience. And as I look at the various job listings, that's really going to play a factor in the types of jobs that I'm eventually offered and the types of jobs that I can reasonably aspire to. So Korea is definitely on my list, and the job search continues, and I will discuss that in future podcasts. The voice is going out, so I think I'm going to stop here. Thank you for listening, and when you come back, I might be persuaded to talk a bit about what I experienced in Bangkok.
Kokujin Chronicles was recorded, edited, and mixed with free open-source software in Ubuntu Studio. This episode was produced March 19, 2011, and featured the musical artistry of Ben 5 Bass from the Lozère Jazz Festival album. This album and thousands of others are available free at www.jamendo.com. Until next time, peace, love, and harmony.